This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of AXL. AXL is the American College of Cardiology Extended Learning Series, featuring conversations in cardiology with the scientists who conduct research in our field and the clinicians who are translating that research into clinical practice. You are about to hear an interview from our latest issue. As an AXL subscriber, you will receive 24 new interviews each month. Plus, depending on your subscription level, we'll have access to hundreds of interviews in our digital library. With AXL, you can stream or download your content for convenient offline access on your mobile device, and each interview qualifies for CME credit and MOC self-assessment points. For more information, visit acc.org/ACCEL. Listen now to a talk Ben Sirica had with Dr. A.J. Curtain, Associate Professor of Clinical Medicine at Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons in New York. They cover coronary angiography, intravascular imaging, FFR, IFR, what to do.
Thanks again for coming, A.J.
Thanks so much for having me.
So this is a fast-moving field, certainly enormous changes from back when all we did was take 2D pictures. And I wonder if you could just set the stage a little bit and say why you think these new physiologic metrics are so important in the cath lab.
You know, the legacy of the cath lab has really been coronary angiography, and it's an invaluable tool. But I think we all know that coronary angiography can be subjective. It's operator-dependent as well. And we've actually progressed beyond the point where we would need to rely only on visually assessed angiography to make clinical treatment decisions. We were talking a little bit earlier, but there are cases where if you take the exact same angiogram and have a patient, you know, with sort of a bona fide 70% stenosis or 60% stenosis, and the patient has typical symptoms in a positive stress test, the cath report will often read 90%. And yet if that same angiogram was ascribed to a patient with minimal symptoms in a normal stress test, then that same lesion might be called 50. And that's just not good enough for our patients. We really need to go beyond that. And I think that's one of the reasons why assessing lesion severity with coronary physiology makes some sense.
Now, I think most people understand FFR, but maybe just quickly describe it, but then really, I think, highlight the difference of IFR and where they are in terms of equivalence and any benefits of one versus the other.
Sure. You know, FFR takes a pressure wire, and you're measuring the pressure distal to the stenosis and then giving adenosine or a hyperemic agent to see how much the pressure drops after the administration of that agent. IFR, instantaneous wave-free ratio, looks at the same sort of physiology, but without the need for hyperemic stimulus. So you're just measuring it at rest. And the way that it's able to achieve its fidelity is by limiting the analysis to the only a specific portion of diastole where the biggest difference between aortic pressure and the distal pressure to a lesion is manifest. And at least in two studies that were presented at the ACC last year, large randomized trials, they both seem to perform relatively equivalently, albeit with less stents used in the IFR arm and clinical outcomes that were no different. And so that's why IFR has sort of gained some ascendancy in the past year.
That's great. And are there any anatomic or clinical situations where these are less reliable?
Yeah, I think that as an interventionalist, you need to know some of the pitfalls. So it's not so much that they're less reliable. The pressures are going to be the pressures, provided that you do the test well. And the operator variability is an important consideration to make. But there are certain scenarios, post-infarct patients with high EDPs, where what the actual number comes back at may be, need to be modified in terms of the clinical decision-making because of some variability in that regard.
That's great. And I think I've heard you say these are continuous measures, so you, again, have to put those in context of the clinical scenario.
That's so important. Just because you have a specific number that's below a cut point doesn't mean you should 100% treat that patient, or if it's above your FFR, say, of 0.82, doesn't mean you should just absolutely leave it alone. You have to make these decisions in the context of the patient, their clinical presentation, and all the other testing that's done.
Great. Let's talk a little bit about the imaging, IVUS and OCT.
Yeah, you know, we have tools. They're, I think, grossly underutilized in the cath lab, particularly now that we have randomized trial data supporting their use in complex lesion subsets. So if someone, a really experienced interventionalist, were to say, I don't need these tools because I do PCI really well as it is, just for simple lesion subsets, that may be true. But now with these data that are emerging, it does appear for more complex lesions that you can achieve further improved outcomes comes by the use of imaging. But the impediments are really knowing how to interpret the images, the cost of the devices themselves. But at the end of the day, I think in the modern cath lab, these are essential components of clinical practice.
And what are the logistical barriers in terms of time and complications of these?
It's really, the complications are very low with the current catheters we have, and that's true for FFR, IFR, as well as imaging. The cost is real, and time is another issue. But in a lab where you're used to doing it, and you have a sort of imaging program or a physiology program, you're talking about adding maybe 5 minutes to the case. And the truth of the matter is that the outcomes can be better with that 5 minutes. If you're the patient, you would want your doctor to take the additional 5 minutes. That's one of the reasons why the Illumium 4 trial is being done. It's going to be an over 2,000 patient trial looking at specifically clinical outcomes, randomization to imaging versus non-imaging based approach.
So you're saying they don't need to be done in everybody, but you think they are being vastly underutilized in current practice.
Yeah, I think so. And some of that's an educational gap and also a value-added proposition type of gap that we need to overcome.
And how do you think, just thinking forward, integration of anatomy and physiology is going to play out?
I think that's the biggest thing is if you can overlay the physiology on the anatomy of the angiogram or even the other imaging, then you can be really precise in your application of therapeutics in the lab, such as PCI. And that's already somewhat here. It's not widespread, but there will only be advances in the next few years that will allow that to become more and more part of practice.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for coming to Axel.
Thanks for having me.
This is Alfred Beauvais, Editor-in-Chief of Axel, and you've been listening to an interview from our recent issue. For more information on how to subscribe to Axel and receive additional interviews published each month, go to acc.org/accel.